Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things, the show where we talk about things after weird things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That's a fact.
Justin Robert Young.
Oh, yeah, it's me.
So, gentlemen, here is the topic for today. Going solo, partnering, or teamwork? Because it's one of the things I've dealt with a lot in life is sometimes I just like to kind of do things at my own pace and get things done. Sometimes you pair up with somebody because part of the excitement and the coolness comes from working with somebody else. And then sometimes you work on a team. And I found that it's hard to partner. It's really, really, really hard to partner. I have a project working on with somebody that they're into it, but they kind of like, I get last minute, oh yeah, I can't do this or whatever. And you're like, I could have known this 24 hours ago and you knew this 3 days ago kind of thing. And it's, you know, you don't want to nag, you don't want to be that person. And it gets frustrating. And I think of like why I sometimes like to do things solo. And I think we were, you know, we're talking a little bit before about how you get the last minute, oh, can we change this? Can we change this? Can we change this? Does that ever stop? Is it just a matter of communications? What's going on?
So, Dave Ramsey, the financial coach and radio host, says that the only ship guaranteed to sink is a partnership. He's not a fan of business partnerships in general because they do tend to break down. This is interesting because my career started with the breakup of a partnership. I originally poured my first 2 years of efforts into magic into a two-person duo, and there was a breakdown of the partnership. There was an inequality that was not satisfactory, that, you know, we had differing opinions. And then we split, and I was like, well, now I have to learn how to do everything on my own. And that was very, very difficult. Strangely, in the world of podcasts, I guess everything was pretty much solo for a good 15-year stretch. But even as soon as I started creating content, I realized the value of having somebody to bounce ideas around. The very first thing I ever did was Brian Brushwood on the Road 10 years ago on YouTube. And that's me and my assistant on the road. Shortly after that, you know, Scam School was ostensibly a solo endeavor. But, you know, everything since Scam School, I've had somebody else to partner with. And I think it's been, on balance, really, really good. And yes, there is that constant compromise, but it's confined to its one particular bubble. Like, I would be horrified about, you know, take everything that I'm doing and picture, if I picture me and one other person besides Bonnie splitting all that, although that's another partnership, that's horrifying. But the idea of having no less than, what, 6-7 co-hosts for all the various endeavors that I do, because everything is locked into its own place, I don't fear getting too trapped behind something. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some things you can keep it going, but I've had some of the best things I've ever had in my life have come through that. But part of it too, it's like you work with somebody who's never really partnered with somebody too, and that's been a frustrating thing for me is that communication issue, is like finding out an hour before, like, oh no, yeah, no, I'm here, I can't do this. It's like, how many times do I have to say, let me know, tell me yeah, this is going to happen, and when do you draw the line?
You know, I think part of that is the hygiene of a good partnership are good deadlines, and understanding that a partnership is really only as good as the project that it's working on. And either you are working on a project with a deadline that you need to go, be it a creative partnership where you want to do shows, or you want to do, you know, Andrew and I working on blogs and podcasts and everything like that. Those were ongoing things, but if they didn't get done, then there was a red flag. And very often those can be the enforcers for, hey, we gotta do this. And if you're going to cancel this, then we got to reschedule it. But it's hard because, you know, to manage that kind of stuff, it can often lead to hurt feelings. And when things get stressed, you have a lot of different ways that you can lash out. And, you know, that was...
I was going to ask...
it's you, Brian. Talking about you, Brian.
Well, no, I don't think we've talked a lot about the nature of having a good partnership. I think there are things you should expect from a partnership arrangement that are different from when you hire somebody to do something. There's some situations where I've dealt with people who have explained very good, totally legitimate reasons why stuff did not happen at a certain time. Maybe there was a bit of sugarcoating or whatever going on. And I found myself having to write people in these situations and say, hey, that's a fine reason it didn't get done. And if we were in an employer-employee relationship, I think that would be the end of it. That would be a fine thing for an employee to explain why the task of the employer did not get done. That's not the partnership I'm hoping to have. You know, partners don't snow each other. They don't sugarcoat stuff because they both know that they're both going to have to eat the garbage that comes out of doing that. And I think that there's a directness. And I think, you know, all four of us in the same room have ascended to that level of honesty where you can own the difficulties with something, and realize, okay, it's going to be painful to lay this out, why I disagree with X, Y, or Z, but not as painful as if I sugarcoat this and push it down the road and pretend it won't become a problem at some point.
Yeah, I've looked at when I decide to work with people, I look at, like, do they get things done? You know, what kind of personality are they? And there are people who will, when the things do, will come to you with a very good explanation for why it didn't get done. And it'll be convincing. You know, we understand that. And it'll be a very legitimate reason. And then there are people when it's due, they get something done. They get something done, and that's hard. And I'm out here in LA, and LA is lovely because it's a place filled with dreams and fantasy and wish fulfillment, but I'm surrounded by very flaky people who do not get stuff done, who talk about the next thing and the next thing. And I was that person for a big part of my life. I did not get things done. And then I realized one day, like, wow, that's a personality trait. There are people who get things done. There are people who do not get things done. I think I'd rather be somebody who got something done. And there are people who knew me before and after and would say there was a marked personality change between, you know, the guy that's putting out 2 or 3 books a year, among other stuff, and the guy that just talked about writing books, talked about that stuff. And so out here, I'm surrounded by a lot of personalities of people like, yeah, I'd like to do this. But they want to do it when it's fun. And then when it's not fun, they give up and they move along to something else. And they kind of never have, unless they had some lucky break, they never broke out of that. They never broke out of that pattern. And they don't realize that's a problem. And that's been a challenge. So I try to look at people who are, you know, who's the person that's like, yeah, I have 3 weeks vacation. Oh, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to go make this. I've got plans to go do this other thing, this cool thing I'm producing or doing this sort of stuff. I'm like, that's the person whose time is already sort of doled out. That's who I want to work with, because the person who has a lot of free time may seem like that's great, but there's a reason why, because they don't get things done. So I look for that. I've never partnered on writing a book with somebody because that sounds like that would just not fit with the way I like to get things done. And I'm trying to, but sometimes you find yourself in partnerships with people like, man, this is going to be a challenge because they don't respect your time, so to speak.
Sure. I will say this. I've been involved in a bunch of different partnerships in my life. And by and large, they wound up being more positive than negative. But I think my personality might be suited for that a little bit. Like, I'm conscious now of the fact that, like, maybe it's the training of being a child of divorce and having to make mommy and daddy feel good about the situation that happened that has conditioned me to be able to play peacemaker in larger, more complicated partnerships, or just understand to me the value of what is productive and what is not. And oftentimes, like, a lot of the personal stuff of, like, do you respect my time? Do you respect my contribution? Do you understand where my strengths are and where your strengths are? And is your version of that in your head insulting to me? That is real and is not a bad thing to be aware of by any stretch of the imagination, but sometimes isn't productive, you know?
And that's one of the, I'm sorry for interrupting, but it strikes me that synopsis of it, because it seems like so much of a partnership is based on honesty, both honesty in the moment. Of course, you should always represent the facts as they truly are, but also honestly making only promises that you know you can commit to keeping, right? Because that's the fastest way to torpedo a partnership, is for one party to figure out that the other party doesn't really mean it. Or when that deadline comes, you're more likely to hear a quote-unquote perfectly legitimate reason why it didn't get done than you are to hear an assessment of how it was delivered on time.
Yeah. That's the challenge. And what I try to do, and I love writing, because writing a book, I could say, okay, you know, generally it's a one person operation. You start, you finish it, and then there's other people can come into play, but you can finish that on your own. We did iTrix because, you know, the blog with Justin, because Justin's an incredibly talented writer and extremely productive person. And I knew that, because as a child of divorce, trying to make somebody happy, he'll just get it done. You know, he would just exploit his psychological vulnerabilities, and it would get done. You know, working with him as a business was great, because we're both guilt driven. We're both very, very guilt driven. We want to try to get things done. And so, you know, that worked, and it helped us just develop skills that played out later on. I've had other friends who are very competent and like, oh, let's go do something. But the moment they're great and they want to go off. And I've had a couple friends who are like super, super competent. They're very entrepreneurial when they're out of work and they're like looking for money. But once they get a moment of stability, once they get a steady income, that entrepreneurial spirit's gone. It's just, they don't want it. Like, yeah, no, that's great. Now I'm like, okay, you really, what you wanted was not to create something new. You just wanted a steady paycheck and you don't care about moving beyond that. And that took me a while to realize, like,
well,
okay.
And that can be fine as long as that's the agreement from the get-go. What's difficult is oftentimes, you know, it's not that people intentionally deceive their partners. It's that honestly, they think their, you know, future version of themselves will be the kind of person that stays excited, stays diligent, stays focused on deadlines and details and stuff. And then they figure out that it's not. And if it's a healthy relationship, then, you know, as a unit, you and the other person say, hey, let's look at these last 6 months. You know, we both agreed on this and it looks like you're just not interested. Can we talk about, you know, not doing it this way anymore, or not doing it together anymore, which I think you can navigate those waters. I don't know that I've lost any, outside of that very first one, I don't know that I've lost any friendships when a partnership ended, because there was effective communication to guide us through the denouement.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think that comes down to, like you said, not knowing your future self. And I know that, like, I've let people down. I know that I've partnered with people and stuff, and I can think of recent stuff where I'm like, oh, this is great because I've got the time to go do this. And then maybe on their side, that window closed of when I was available. And then they're like, oh, let's go do this. And it's kind of like, I don't want to harp on, like, yeah, I said that I could do this when we had that time available, you know, and that gets problematic because they don't quite understand that, you know, once that window's closed, I've got serious commitments that I have to respond to elsewhere. But I certainly know that I've been on the other side of that I have let people down or whatever. And so that's the thing I think about too, is that, you know, I have a project where I've been working on that. It's like, it's cool. It's like, yeah, this is great if I can spend 48 hours on it. If I have to spend any time beyond that, my interest is going to go way down. And there was a communications problem. And then it's like, hey, can you do this? And it's like, I'm so past that thing right now. I'll do this, but this other thing you asked me to do, that's a 72-hour problem. And I'm going to have to be like, no, I can't do that. And the thing you want isn't worth my time to do that for what you're trying to do.
So how do you make sure that balance scale, time credits is transparent to your partner? Because people don't often knowingly overspend their credit with their partnerships, whether it's their spouse, their friends, or their business partners. How do you make sure to make it clear, like, okay, I will do this, but understand you're spending 10,000, you know, space credits with me because this is how hard it's going to be for me to do?
You know, I'm going to say the hard part too is, like, you know, working in software stuff, like, I'm horrible at estimating how long something will take. You know, I'll be like, okay, I got four items on this checklist. this should be easy. This should be easy. Then you go do it and you're like, oh, this isn't working right. Now I've got to spend 8 hours chasing down this bug. And you feel great when you solve the problem. You're like, oh, those other three things I was supposed to get done didn't get done. And so that's problematic. And certainly as I become more skillful, I'll probably be better at that. But I see experienced programmers and coders, and I understand why they get frustrated with minor, what perceived to be minor little changes, you know, like, oh, let's just do this, let's just do that, you know? And it's, you know, the question is, in software, you can only estimate what you've done before. Somebody points out, yes, but you're still forced to do estimates, though. You still have to guess what it's going to take, though. In a perfect world, you can say, I can base this on my past experience. Your accuracy certainly increases with you go up there. But another thing, too, is I think about, like, oh, yeah, if I want to create a new site, I can create a, you know, user authentication system. I can do all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know how to do it. But that's still 4 hours to go do all that, you know. So,
you know, I think that there – it is a personality-based thing, and I think Andrew and I worked really, really well together, and I think Ryan and I have worked really well together in a much less intensive area. But even in situations where you know, when we're doing, like, the VR shoots and everything, I think almost immediately there is a kind of copacetic understanding of what the other one needs to kind of get through it, and that's us being pampered, stupid talent.
Well, also old married couple. I mean, I think there's a real value to seeing somebody react and not participating in it, but instead be all like, okay, well, he's low on this fuel bar. Let me do my best to, you know.
But, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll step back on that, though, a little bit, because I think that if we were to do those VR shoots within year one of BB Live Show, it would have been different, but I don't know if at the core it would have been all that different. You know?
I agree. Like
you would think that it would be... That would have been different?
No. I agree with you. The details and the specifics would change, but I think the heart of it would have been identical. So, yeah, you're right.
And I think that part of it is, you know, we still kind of have this sort of tribal idea. I think it is something that all three of us have, that I'm going to bring my worth. I need for you to understand and respect what I am bringing. And as part of that, you also show what you are doing, right? And that through that mutual respect, we can build something more. And Andrew nailed it. There are just some people who do not work like that. There are people for whom are not about, I mean, you know, my entire adult life, I was talking to somebody that I used to go to college with, and he was like, you made me realize that it's like I've always kind of been somebody that's always had six other different things going on. Like I was doing the newspaper, but I was also in sketch comedy and I was also doing this other stuff. Like, and now I'm doing podcasting, but I'm also in board games, but I'm also doing, you know, this other stuff. So there are people for whom want to create and want and see the world as a clay that they can mold to make sure that they make as much as possible, and they relish the opportunities to come in so they can add more to their plate. And then there are people who want to confine work to a silo, usually defined by how much they get paid for it on a regular basis, and that's it.
Well, and keep in mind, there's no right or wrong to it. There is effective, like, and non-effective personality types when it comes to partnering with folks.
Well, that's kind of key there, because I think, like, let's break down Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I want to hear what you guys did.
Okay. Wow. Let me dial back in time.
It's Memorial Day weekend. It's time to take off, relax, chill out.
I'm actually going to open up my calendar and take a look.
All right, I got it. Friday, woke up, did the new podcast, the Headlines Politics podcast for the Politics thing. Had a huge week on Patreon because we started doing that. So that was the first thing I did after I went for a run. Then did the 3.5-hour Friday Hype Train stream. Did a truncated Hearth and Oats right after that. Got on the phone for about 45 minutes with Andrew. And then went off to San Francisco to the Twitch offices. Did a charity stream where I danced like an asshole for about an hour or so. And then networked over there for a while, went out to meet with Tom and Veronica for the night, and that was Friday. Saturday, kind of screwed off a little bit, but mostly worked on the Kickstarter script for Action News, worked on a one sheet for Action News because talking with a couple partners at some websites to help with the launch and see where we go from there. Sunday, got on the phone with them, hashed out a couple ideas on where we want to go and an action item of where we go with that business partnership. Did do a little screwing off then. And then this morning, woke up, did the politics podcast, and hopped on for this.
Yeah, man.
Basically just screwed around, did nothing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, what's funny is how disparate.
I was day drinking for a lot of Sunday though, so there was a little steam blown off.
On Friday, my Friday started with the release of the new Modern Rogue episode that we had to kind of midwife and you know, answer questions and that stuff. I ended up having lunch with Corey Coleman of Toasted Donut to swap double ideas. Did I say Toasted Donut?
Yeah,
I did. Yeah.
Double toasted?
Double toasted. Yeah. Sorry. Toasted Donut. Wow. Toasted Donut was what Dignation became.
But they swapped the Dignation channel to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Double toasted. Thank you. Wow. That was crazy. And then I swooped in and jumped on Justin's stream. I'm sorry that it was as short as it was. Then swooped over to a Wizard Academy where they do a Friday get together. And
had a business meeting?
And we had our quarterly Bizarre Magic team meeting, and then the next day was largely a family day, if I remember correctly. I think I did some work, but then yesterday we shot Modern Rogue, where we blew up a car and partnered with the folks over at Stunt Ranch, and then today is I ran 10 miles this morning, and then we just did weird things. It's after things, and then I got cord killers afterwards.
So again, you sort of slacked off over the weekend.
Little bit.
You see a pattern there?
Yeah, man. I guess you know what's funny is I'm so in it that I don't bother to notice that it might be remarkable to someone else just doing a bunch of stuff.
Because that's the thing is ultimately I don't think of it in that same way where it's like, all right, well, wait, you worked after 5? Like you worked before this? Like you worked at this at these times? Like there's projects, and projects either need to get done or they don't need to get done. And theoretically, if I didn't have projects to do, I wouldn't be working on stuff. But, you know, if I don't have projects to do, I drive myself up a wall and think that I'm slowly decaying. So I wind up picking up more projects.
Well, and it's funny, too. I'm sure you're cut from the same cloth, Andrew. It's like you can list all the stuff you've done. But at the end of the day, all you're going to do is obsess about like, man, I really did. I spent like 2.5 hours playing Hearthstone today. Today, what a waste. What a waste. So much bandwidth not used.
Oh, 100%. And, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Saturday I did, you know, spend the whole day at Disneyland, which was fun. And I felt, I'm like, glad I did that because I just don't do that anymore. But, you know, it was like, yeah, the same sort of thing where like, because I knew, because I already planned Friday. I had my Sunday planned out, was like, okay, I got to work on the third draft of Looking Glass, the novel, because I got the notes back on that. I know I'm going to do that. And then I have this other project I'd committed to, and I said I'd work on it this weekend, so that'll be my Sunday thing. There's other things I want to do, but those are things I'm going to do because they're commitments either to a publisher or a commitment to another person I said I would do. And I said, like, I'll give that a day to do those two things. I did that, and then once those things were done, I then worked on some other stuff. But I've noticed in my friends who are – my flaky friends versus my non-flaky friends. And again, all lifestyle choice, my non-flaky friends, that's what their weekends are like. And my flaky friends, well, they did a bunch of stuff, but the thing they're always pulling towards is where they went to go do the fun thing, where they did the fun thing here. Like, oh yeah, I did this last minute. So-and-so called. I had to go do this thing. Like, well, that was a hangout. Oh, but it was good because there was a networking thing. It's like, no, you didn't want to do the thing. You don't feel dragged. You don't feel compelled to finish the project. And that's been, you know, and I look at parts of my life where like, it's hard. I'm going to go do the fun thing and I'll rationalize the fun thing. And then I'll have great excuses why the real thing didn't get done and I won't feel bad. And that's, you know, that's a choice. It's a choice. And I think that when you partner, one, make sure you really need a partner and understand that partnership is not going to make them a more efficient person. That partnership is not going to make them somebody who gets things done. In fact, it's just going to magnify. If they're flaky, you're going to see the biggest part of their flakiness. If they get things done and they're detail-oriented, you're going to see that. All it does is just put that up on a big screen for you to see, and that's a thing to think about, you know, before you get into it or leverage too much of your life into something that somebody else could derail.
Yep.
And I have friends that are absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people that I've worked with before that I would not partner with them again because they have no idea how bad of a partner they are. They have no idea in their mind, nothing they did to disappoint. This didn't happen because of this. This didn't happen because of that. And it's like, yeah, nothing happened, you know, and you just sort of say, okay, you know what? This is just going to be a good friend. That's somebody who I collaborate with.
In the book,
Brian.
Yes, in the book, the one thing there's a very good clarifying question is when you're working with someone, and this is in an employer-employee setting, but if you're doing that right, it should feel like a partnership. The question he asks is this the best you could do, or is this the best it could be done? And that's a very different scenario because if when they run it through their filter, oftentimes truly the two are synonymous. And really what it does is it forces you to acknowledge, boy, I have not been giving 100% to this. This is not the best it could be done. In theory, if this was a $1 million task, I probably wouldn't have just said, well, I made 3 calls. What am I supposed to do? Force them to answer the phone? It's like, no, you'd get creative and figure out where to go next.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that one of the best pieces of advice I ever got, and I'll repeat this again, was I met the guy who was a businessman. He was in charge of a very large company. And I said, hey, and this is going back like 15 years. I said, what piece of advice could you give me? I said, I hadn't been around a lot of people in business. I didn't have a lot of mentors in that area. You know, I didn't have, but I was one of these people trying to learn from people around me. I said, what piece of advice would you give me? And he said, when somebody sends me a resume, I throw it away. When somebody wants to come work for me and they just send me that, I throw it away. But if somebody comes to my office, tells my secretary, says, hey, I don't have an appointment. And my first instinct when I'm thinking he says this and somebody comes to my office, I'm like, oh, and you just send them away, right? You know, because, you know, that what an intrusion. No, that's not where this went. He said, somebody comes to my office. They say, hey, I don't have an appointment, but if I could have, you know, 5 minutes of Mr. Smith's time, that'd be great. I'm willing to wait. He says, if they sit there and they wait, if they're willing to come in there and make the effort to come see me, I will meet with that person. And they gave me their resume, then I will read it because that impresses me. He says, that's what I need. He says, when I send people out to go do deals, when I send people to make things happen, I don't want somebody who just sends out a letter. I don't want somebody who just sends this thing out to make it happen. I want somebody that makes sure that they're there and they show up. And the first time I took that piece of advice, it worked wonderfully for me. I was trying to get hold of somebody at a public television station. And I said, I could send a letter, but I said, you know what? I'm going to go there. I'm going to say I'm in the area, which I was technically, but not for that. Said, hey, I just want to bring this by. If so-and-so's got 5 minutes, love to talk to them. Say, emphasis, if they've got 5 minutes, love to just say hello. They came out, met me, and had a partnership. And it was powerful, powerful advice because it showed me the difference between somebody who does the least they have to do and somebody who does the most they can do.
Yes.
If they will work. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. That's something that I learned from the both of you where – if you have something in front of you and you have an opportunity or a connection that could be made and that person is not in your state and not in your city, man, isn't it a coincidence that you're just randomly going to happen to be in LA, New York, DC, San Francisco at the exact time that they'd be able to meet. Isn't that nuts that your aunt, brother, sister, old college friend happen to be doing a thing right around there? And it's like, there is, I mean, I hate to have it come down to, you know, like do or do not, there is no try, but either like, you know, either it's happening or it's not. And either you are going to, and like now where I'm looking at with this like Action News thing, there's a couple ideas that would like radically shift how I'm going to spend this month. And it's like, this is what it is. The best deal that's going to happen is the best deal that's going to happen. And I'm going to not, at the end of that Kickstarter 30 days, look back and say, man, I really wish I would have done blank, you know, like because either this stuff is going to get done and you're going to meet the people and you're going to make the deals and you're going to launch the thing or it's not. And either you got that mindset or you don't.
Well, and plus also, you think about it, like they're speculative investments of your time. There was a case where I was supposed to have a meeting with a big production company, and I was pitching them the Modern Rogue.
Vivid Video.
Yes. And so they set a time and I was like, yeah, that'll be great. And so I booked a flight out there and it happened to be, you know, I was going to go up to San Francisco or Oakland to see Justin or I forget for what it was. But then I added a leg in L.A. just to go for that meeting. And then, you know, they didn't know that I wasn't local to Los Angeles. I didn't see why that was relevant. And so instead, you know, we had a thing and then they call. They're like, oh, it's really busy today. Let's push this off. And I was like, OK, well, just so you know, I definitely flew in for this meeting. If we could do it today, I'd really like to do it. And then they're all like, oh, I don't know. And so then I just went there. I was like, hey, didn't get a clear answer from you guys. So I am right outside at the hotel across the street from you. Whenever you want to get together, you know, go and do it. And then basically they called and they're like, yeah, still can't do it. And so then I sent an email to two people that at the company are like, hey, I'm here at the place. Too bad. I'm sorry to hear that you are not able to take the meeting. And then at that point, one of the two people I emailed just turned around and was like, WTF, what are you doing? Why are you not taking this meeting? And then, you know, sure enough, I took the meeting and it ended up being an utterly disappointing meeting. And it was not a match at all. Also, maybe the most valuable thing that happened that entire year because it shut down. Like, it was like I went to audition for them and I realized, oh, wait, no, I don't trust you guys. You're not right for me. And then I walked away. Like, you, on the one hand, you could look and be like, whoa, what a huge waste, and it didn't even turn into anything. No, it was a big investment of time, energy, and effort, and involved a lot of me hanging out, you know, doing emails in a random Wi-Fi. But at the end of the day, I was able to close the door and with complete clarity of vision know, okay, the Modern Rogue does not belong pitching in this environment with these people in this so on. And so it ended up being a very, very good thing that on paper would look like a giant, you know, F up.
Yeah, there's that every time you go through that process. And if you pay attention, because like, you know, I'd gone through a lot of pitch meetings and stuff and you walk out of there going like, yeah, they weren't into it. And I've gone at other meetings where I've pitched stuff and I've walked out and had partners like, oh, I think that went great. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, no, it was great. It was great. And I'm like, and then I was right because having gone through that process so many times, like I can tell an indication of interest and I can tell politeness and, well, you know, they're, you know,
I'll tell you what, you want to know what? I think you've also kind of ID'd another sort of personality difference is that some people just kind of want Prince Charming to roll up on a white horse. And I think for the three of us, we've been through enough stuff where you partner with people and it works and it doesn't work, or there's a promise made and it is either fulfilled or not fulfilled, that you realize that this is about trial and error. It's not about waiting and being very good and having high marks and eventually you'll be rewarded with the best opportunity ever. It's about going out there and doing it and figuring it out, because it's messy and weird, and the only way that you're really going to get people's attention is by making them value you because of what you've done.
Well, and we've talked about this experience before. When it came time for us to put together NSFW, or for me to put together NSFW for the Twit Network, you know, it was looking back, we had a lot of fun with all the retinue of cast and characters, but I did not know how to do a show without Justin, simply because Justin was the only one who always unfailingly showed up for every single session.
Which says more about just he had no place else to go.
I mean, that's fine. Look, you and I both know that. Let's pretend it's something more noble.
Yeah. So I would say the takeaways from this are, if you look at people who are getting things done, the people who are in demand, people who have, who when you ask them what they did in the last 3 days, and the focus is around the projects they got done and not the parties or the fun things they got to go do, you're like, well, that's an indication, you know, if they're, and I, because you often like, oh, you should partner so and so, they need something. I'm like, nah, that's the worst person. You know, I've had people like, you should help my friend. They've got a lot of great ideas. Like, why aren't they writing? Nah, they just need to be motivated. That don't come from outside.
Yeah.
That's the worst person.
Don't want to be that Prince Charming to somebody. When they look at you and they see Prince Charming that's going to give them the thing that they're missing, it's like, no. You need a running mate. You don't need.
That's the astonishing thing is times that we've needed or that we've been short on staff or we needed help. It's astonishing to me how I can say I am lacking in someone to do this. And then I'll announce it on Twitter, like send me an email at this and explain why it should be you. Fully half right at the top. The first line will say, I am seeking a position of, and then that's all I read because it's like, I'm not interested in what you're seeking. I'm interested in, you know, what you can do.
Problem.
Yeah, exactly. And the best people are, you know, it's kind of like that Fight Club thing where it's like you stand there for 3 days with no food, no water, and no support. You know, it's like, that's the worst thing is I'm not going to help you. It's like, you're either the kind of person who understands that your new gig is to, you know, solve this problem for me and or not. But it's like if I start you off by encouraging you and dragging you along and keeping you afloat, then that's probably what I'm going to be doing forever from that day forward with you. And that's not there's not enough in my budget, my emotional budget, to do that.
There's a book which will probably be my pick, which I read. It was kind of an interesting book with the startup J curve. And it got into like how almost all businesses sort of go through this period where things don't work, they fall apart or whatever, and they kind of have to reorganize and figure out what they are. And that's the critical junction, Howard Love. That is the point at which things either make or break. You know, and a very fascinating personality, I think, is Travis Kalanick of Uber, which controversial in many, many ways. This is a guy who's got a reputation for an abrasive personality. Unfortunately, just had a horrible tragedy this last past couple of days where his mother, you know, passed away in an accident, went through that. But he's a very controversial person, but this is a person that is a fighter. This is a person that you look at, why do they keep him with this company for so long? Why is he still running, you know, Uber? Even why were the VCs who put the money in there happy with the controversy and the difficulties? Because it's a industry filled with disasters, filled with failures, and he kept the thing moving forward, and that is a rare skill. Jeff Bezos, probably going to become the richest man in the world. You read early days of Amazon when they're trying to get this thing going. He's driving the station wagon to the fulfillment center where they, you know, the companies that sell the books, loading it up himself to drive it back so they can ship them out. This is a guy that is going to make things happen. And he left a job in banking. He left a very high paid job to go into that. And that's the same too as like, Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel's another guy who was working for, you know, this finance firm that like you think like, oh, you've got it made. But he said, everybody in here is trying to figure out how to get out. Everybody wants in.
That's the astonishing thing is I have a friend of mine who's, high up in the, you know, vice presidency tiers of corporate culture for the company that he's at. And to hear him talk about his relationships with everything, it's straight up Game of Thrones. It's everybody knows who's making how much money, who's under the chopping block, because it's this, some number of people have to be fired. How far do you want to stick your neck out? How much do you want to own a thing? How can you appear busy? Which, you know, because it's like being credited for working on a thing is more important than actually having worked on the thing. It's a different world to me.
Yeah, and you get into like strange things in corporate world where it was like something like Microsoft or somebody had this policy of like they would like routinely like, oh, we'll do our reviews and we'll fire the bottom 5-10% perform automatically. And it's like, regardless of whatever your metric was, you're going to let go of the lower 10, even though random walk would kind of say that if everybody's performing at kind of an optimal level, that's maybe a horrible, terrifying thing to do to people. But, you know, you get into these crazy, crazy kind of corporate environments that people deal with. But, it's people who leave those environments but are extremely hardworking often just do amazing things. And so I'm very, very impressed by people who sort of, you know, like I see in the startup world, you'll see that some companies, their goal, they create a business because the entirety of their business plan is just to get their startup funded, not because they're customer focused, not because they're focused on building a big business, but because their point of success is actually just getting the funding to it. And that's where they say, okay. And that's really where other, the really successful people, and that's That's, you know, the first step.
I can understand a little bit of that, you know, because there was a lot of compromises that we made working on the television project, both in the specials and in the series, where it's like I knew that this was not going to yield the best art. This was not the best idea. But, you know, you spend your coupons sparingly. It's like, well, do I want to go to war on this? Do I want to push everything back? It's like what I really want is for this thing to make it to air. You know, it's and I think that's a little bit of the same vibe that those people have.
Well, let me clarify then. So like sure. I have a friend that puts on these startup events, and I go there and just hang out, and I'll see literally a hundred people there with their, you know, their business plans, and you talk to them about like, oh yeah, well, you know, they've spent a lot of time thinking about how they're going to try to woo over their investor. And you start asking them about, well, how do you improve your product? How do you improve your customers? And you realize their business plan purely is to try to come up with an idea that will get funded. Mm-hmm. Not that they have a grand vision for their business, not that they have a grand idea of how they're going to please people or try to solve a world problem. They're really there because it's like, you know, I'll just write a screenplay, not because I have a story to tell, because I hear you make money doing that. And that sort of thinking and certain things that, and I guess that's the point, is like there's not a lot of thought beyond I'll just do this. Well, this seems like a way to make money. People, I'll create a business, I'll go there, I'll get a fund. Like, what's your business? Why do you want to do this? What do you want to do? Reasons, you know, and you talk to these people too to realize like how paper thin some of this stuff is, you know, like paper thin, like, oh, let me see your deck, we're working on it. Like, you're here asking for money, you're asking for a couple $100,000, and you don't even have like a 10-page deck, you know, like.
And I know what a deck is, but let's pretend that the audience doesn't know. What's a deck?
So a deck is a presentation deck. It's just a stack of slides, effectively PowerPoint slides.
Got it.
Like 10 of them are different. They're different sort of, you know, thoughts, schools of thought on what, you know, what you should do. One of the big ones is the one pager, just the quick one page. What you are.
The Fyre Festival had a deck. You can have a deck.
Yeah. And so it's sort of in lieu of like a lot of like VCs, they don't so much care about your business plan or stuff like that, because I think that sort of to me has been a warning sign. Like I had a project with a friend and like, oh yeah, these people, they want to invest, and like, oh, you know, they want to see our full out. They want to see our business plan, our costs and stuff like that. And I'm like, dude, that's fantasy. So that is pure fantasy what they're asking for. You know, that's like a serious VC isn't going to ask for that. They're not mature investors. They're people that think that's what mature investors do. They're asking for the wrong things. You know, they should be wanting to know what our talent hires are going to be, you know, what our timeframes are on there, what our run rate's going to be, what we plan to be spending on. But like, it's, you know, you sort of see sort of that thinking. But anyhow, I guess my point is that like people who get things done, that hyper committed personality, that's rare, but they're going to, you know, I see that in like, you know, Jeff Bezos, who's an amazing personality. You saw that with the termination of Bill Gates early on when he started out. You see a lot with Steve Jobs. You know, Steve Jobs would call up the president, like David Packard of Hewlett Packard, and ask him for free, you know, parts as a teenager. Like, can we get some parts? Can we get some free parts? It's like, who's this kid calling? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Just come get whatever you need, you know? And that kind of perseverance is important. It's critical.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just buying your pick, the startup J-curve.
It's an interesting read. I wasn't as immediately taken to it as I did with like Peter Thiel stuff and some of the other ones.
0 to 1.
But I think that so many people who are very credible and intelligent really like it that I go like, okay, I'm probably not smart enough or experienced enough to really appreciate the value because I haven't gone through that, you know. So, but I was certainly enjoyed it. But I was like, you know what, like this will probably resonate for me later on. You know, right now I'm like, I guess that's important. It's like when you give recommendations to people like, this is really critical. Like, yeah, whatever. And you're like, you're like, I'm giving you like the best advice in the world. And it's just, you know, like I had somebody wanted to do a startup and like, yeah, I've got this, my domain name's like, you know, really-cool.net, something like that.
Sure.
I'm like, you've got a hyphen and you're a .net. Hyphen one, you should never use a hyphen. To your .net. He's like, yeah, well, I'm like, you should
also, for the record, crack investigator Bryce Castillo has already taken us to really-cool.net and it's under construction.
Yes. But it's funny because it's like you tell somebody like, yeah, like, no, like I'm telling you that like if you're gonna launch this and you're launching with this type of name and you're in like go for all no hyphen, go for .io XYZ or whatever. Don't do the hyphen. And really nothing says we couldn't get .com more than a .net.
Yep.
You know, yeah. But and you could try to, if people are like, yeah, I'm like the fact that this is so important to me, the fact that this is so important to me should just, you know, say to that. Yeah. .co. Yeah. .do.co. If you come up with something really clever or something like that, but yeah, the problem with .co is it sounds a lot like it should be a .com. You know, you're like, should be a .com, should be a .com. And I've had, you know, some domains I've bought because I'm like, you know, I'm never going to get a good one, but then I've had some that worked out really well, you know. But anyhow, just some of the things you just tell people, like, no, just don't. You know, like, work with somebody who's like, I go to their website and it's Flash. They got a Flash animation. I'm like, do you need to, yeah, I know people still, I'm like, you're nothing says that you're 10 years behind the times like this, like nothing. This is just really,
unless you're rebooting Newgrounds as a nostalgia destination portal, then get up out my face with this Flash.
Yeah. But anyway, those are minor things, but you get into that sort of stuff where you tell some people like, they doesn't seem important to them. So they doesn't seem important. And then you watch later on, you're like, yeah, I try to pay attention when people are like, really, like, no, really, no, really. So,
yeah.
All right. So my pick was a startup J curve. Any other picks?
Yeah, man, I'm going to plug a podcast that I've been getting into and enjoying quite a bit. Matt and Mattingly's Ice Cream Social. If you listen to Penn Sunday School, then you know that Matt Donnelly is on there every single week, and his podcast is really good. And they do a thing called Scoop Fest, kind of like Nerdtacular. Justin and I are going to go do Night Attack there in Vegas later this year in September. But if you want to get caught up on their stuff, they're two improv comedians. They're very, 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 very funny.
I'll give two scoops of praise to that pick.
Sweet. Is that your pick too, Justin?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I was the other scoop.
Yeah. No. I was with you.
I mean, I understood. But I was clarifying. Wanted to make sure, gentlemen. This has been very enlightening. It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.